and call to order the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. For those of you that are looking for copies of the bill or copies of the spreadsheets, we ran out of them, so we are making copies, and they will be here soon. They will be put over on this table. That's correct. So they will be put over on this table. What we're going to do today is we are going to go through the bill and walk through the spreadsheet. We will be taking questions along the way, so hopefully going to get through it maybe in about 45 minutes. And then we will also take some testimony. We have folks signed up today to testify. Then the process is tomorrow we will take amendments Thursday we'll be taking up amendments in committee. If you don't know, we have a 24-hour rule, so that amendments, anyone has one, they're due tomorrow, but the members will be giving them to us by 4 o'clock. Then we'll take those up on Thursday. We'll have more public testimony, and we hope to then pass the bill out on Thursday afternoon. So with that, I have a couple of comments I want to say about the bill. First of all, first of all, I just want to make some general comments about the bill. I want to thank the committee members for their hard work. I think everybody brought good bills before us, and they worked very hard, and we've worked hard to get as much in this bill as we could. If you haven't heard, we had $27 million in the base to work with and $13 million in one-time money. So we took that and we went back to, if some of you were here our very first day of session, you might remember we said we were going to do three things this session. We were going to move towards closing the achievement gap, we were going to provide more quality childcare experiences, and we were going to highlight citizen engagement. And this bill delivers on all three of those things, as well as some innovative funding. As you'll see, we're going to close the achievement gap. As you'll see in the bill, we're going to restore funding for Head Start and school readiness programs to the 2003 levels, help more at-risk kids get ready for school, and that was a bill that was offered by Representative Bly, and Representative Kranz had a bill, and Representative Fritz. We're proposing a scholarship initiative with two rural pilots, and most of you have heard about that. That's in this bill for high-quality pre-K experiences. For quality child care experiences, you'll see we are going to be implementing the school readiness service agreements, where the Department of Ed will work with up to 50 child care providers. And we are going to focus on improving family, friend, and neighbor care through targeted grants. So that's also in this bill. And that was Representative Murphy's bill. And we're also, I know some of you are very interested in the caps on the license fees. We are doing that. They're capped to $50 per year, as well as the state will be picking up the background checks. We'll be walking through that, but that's in this bill. So good things for quality child care. And as you know, we worked on citizen engagement by going out to New Horizons and seeing a child care center firsthand and talking about their relationships with the St. Paul schools, as well as we had a hearing off-site with the ABE. The innovative part of this, and then we'll start to walk through the bill, is we are funding the hub concept, which is Representative Peterson's bill, for $1.5 million. We're going to fund three of those for $500,000 apiece, and I think that's a great piece of innovation. We also put the School Readiness Advisory Board in here, so that opportunity for citizens to get involved, and also so we can pull MDE and DHS together and try to work together between child care and education. And we funded AE at $3.5 million for 2 years, so they also got a nice increase, and that was Representative Winkler's bill. With that, those are some of the highlights, but we will go through this more thoroughly. We'll have our fiscal analysts do that. What we're going to do is, in order to get the bill off the table, though, is I want to take House File 1056 off the table, and I'm going to move the A07-0428 amendment. I don't know if everybody has that. That's basically the bill numbers, A070428. Is there any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And the amendment is adopted. And then we'll proceed with the spreadsheet and the language discussion. So, Ms. Adrians, are you ready to walk through the spreadsheet?
Madam Chair, I'm ready.
Okay, let's get started.
let's rock.
Okay, we'll get ready to walk through the bill. It's very exciting for us, you have to realize. We've been waiting a long time to do this. So with that, we will walk through the bill.
Especially the numbers. This is yes. Well, I want to start out by just trying to give you a few clues as to how the spreadsheet is set up, hopefully to make it easier to read. Remember that the numbers are always in thousands. So if you see, a number, it might look lower than it is. Let me talk about the column headings as well. Starting from the left, everything was based off of the February forecast, so it should be as updated as possible. We have the February forecast for the 2006 and 7 biennium, then 2008 and 9 and 10 and 11. And then I've put in the governor's recommendations for the two bienniums. And the column that says diff, it's the difference between the governor's recommendations and the base. And the base that I'll refer to is always 2008 and 9. And then the House recommendations are what is proposed for the committee so far up to this point. And you'll see 2008 and 9, and then the biennium total right there. And then there's a column that's the difference between the House and the base. And again, that's the 2008-9 House recommendations versus the 2008-9 base. And then it goes into the difference between the House recommendations and the governor's recommendations. And then it continues out for 2010-11, the difference between the House and the base and the House and the governor as well. Another thing I want to point out is that the first page is the Department of Education accounts that we have in this committee, and then page 2 has the Department of Human Services accounts that we have in the committee. And I want to show you how I put out things that are one-time funding. So an example of that would be the hubs, which is on line 6. You'll see that there is an amount for $750,000 for each year under the House recommendation for 2008 and 9. But if you look at 2010 and 11, the number appropriated there is zero. So that means that's a one-time funding expenditure. And then the way that I've designated change items, there have been changes in existing programs, so I'll try to go through that. But if there's a program that's relatively new, those are in italics underneath some of the program headings. So, for example, under Early Childhood and Family Support, you'll see ECFE, which is an existing program. We altered it a little bit. So the base was under current law, or it is under current law, at $112. And the recommendation so far is to do it at $120. And under that Early Childhood Teacher Training, that's a new program that doesn't exist. So anything you see in italics like that should be a relatively new program. And I think that's everything. So now I'm just going to start going through a little bit more line by line.
Okay.
Feel free to jump in.
I think what we'll do is move the minutes, and then I also want to talk about just procedurally how we're going to handle questions.
Okay.
Let's see. Representative Wardlow, have you looked at the minutes?
Yeah, I did.
You want to move them?
Yes, I will. I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Wardlow moves approval of the minutes for March 15th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The minutes are adopted. And what I wanted to say, we will, some of these I will jump in and talk about whose bill it was and where some of these initiatives came from. Again, we're going to try to get through it in about 45 minutes, so I'm hoping we will take questions as we go along, so do try to catch either Trisha's or mine or Sarah's eye, and we'll answer questions, but hopefully we can get through it as well. So with that, let's proceed.
Okay. So now this is the fun part where we say where we started to spend the money. Okay, like I said, for ECFE, the biggest change there was changing the amount from $112 to $120. And you can see that the additional money that the committee is recommending spending there is, if you go all the way to the right, under the difference between the house and the base, it's $5.417 million. And then underneath that, some of those new programs, There are a number of governor's initiatives that he proposed in his bill originally that the committee is also recommending funding. And one of those is the early childhood teacher training. So the governor recommended spending $225,000 there for the biennium. And the committee recommends doing that as well. And then, as Representative Slavik said, the hubs is right underneath there. And then the early childhood scholarship, this one, the governor recommended putting 28.9 million in the first biennium and then 57 million in the second biennium. And this is where the committee is recommending doing the rural pilot program. So it's just a little bit on a smaller scale than what was initially recommended. So this committee will do that for $2 million in the biennium. And then under school readiness, the recommendation is to increase the existing school readiness programs by $1.9 million.
Ms. Sanders, I think we skipped the ECFD accountability.
Oh, I'm sorry. The ECFD accountability, that was another recommendation of the governor's that the committee decided not to fund. And so, again, that's where you'll see the difference between the House recommendation and the governor's recommendations. It shows up as a negative $407,000. Okay, so moving on to school readiness.
Just to say, we are going to go through the language then next. So we have a language bill to go through as well.
The school readiness improvement was another initiative of the governor's that the committee was unable to fund. And the school readiness board is the next line item there. And that will be an ongoing program. Life Track Resources is the next on line 12. And that's another one of those one-time spending programs for $1 million for the biennium in 2008 and 2009. And the Minnesota Learning Resource Center is also a one-time spending program for $150,000 in that first biennium.
And that was a Lane bill.
Mm-hmm. And then some of the programs that where the committee has decided to maintain the base level of funding, that's the health and development screening and the Educate Parents Partnership. So that's where you see, if you look at the difference between the House and the base, and the House and the governor's recommendations as well, those numbers are zeros because the governor recommended maintaining the base level of funding, and the committee is going to do that as well. And then the kindergarten entrance assessment. This is another area where the recommendation from the committee is to spend more money in this area. And I believe this was the one to up the number of pupils up to 30%.
30% will be
30%.
Assessed.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily look like a new change item, but you can see that additional money is recommended to be spent there. For the first biennium, it would be $1.36 million, and then in the second biennium, it would be a little bit more than $1.5 million. Early Childhood Part C is a program that was funded through this committee, but it's been transferred back to K-12 education. They had there's a special education account there, and so it made, and Early Childhood Part C is a special education program, so it made more sense to have all the spending come out of one spot. So that's why that program has been zeroed out, and that's what the governor recommended and the committee is recommending as well. And then Head Start received an extra $2 million from the committee's recommendations. And so for the Early Childhood and Family Support Program in the Department of Education, the total spending for the House recommendation in the first biennium, you can see, is $116 million. And this is the increase over the base spending is $13.5 million. And the governor, it's 22.8 million underneath what the governor recommended. And the majority of that is from the governor's early childhood scholarship that spent a lot more than the committee is recommending. So any questions so far? We're doing okay? Okay, moving on to community education and prevention. For community education, the recommendation is to just maintain the base level of funding for that, so leaving it at $2.1 million. Adults with Disabilities Aid, this program, we're recommending spending $361,000 over the base, so it would put the total spending for the biennium at $1.78 million. The Hearing Impaired Adults Program and the School Age Care Aid, the recommendation is to just maintain current levels of spending, and that's in line with the governor's recommendations as well. And then the next three are new programs, the Neighborhood Circulators Grants, the After School Community Learning Grants, and the Professional Development Grants. And these are all one-time spending programs, and you can see the different levels. The first one it's proposed to do $175,000, and that one is just in 2008 as well. And I think the bill might have, when we go through the bill, some of these numbers are updated a little bit more than what's in the bill, so there are some variances there, but we can, if you have questions on that, we can go back. And then for the after-school community learning grants, a recommendation of $2.3 million, and then $200,000 for the professional development grants in the biennium. So this total, the difference for community education and prevention in the base, the committee is recommending spending an additional $3.1 million. And this is about $3.1 million over the governor's recommendation as well. So then for self-sufficiency and lifelong learning, the majority of the new spending recommended by the committee so far is in the adult basic education aid area. And we're recommending spending for the biennium $81.6 million, and this is an increase of $3.2 million.
And that was a Winkler bill?
Mm-hmm. And actually, the GED test increase, that was, I believe it was part of the same bill as well. So that's where that increase of $550,000 comes in. Or, I'm sorry, yeah, the total spending of $800,000. And then the GED test for homeless, that's also a one-time appropriation where it would be $100,000 for the first year, and it would be money that could be carried over into following years if not spent in that first year.
It's a Hornstein bill, just to add to that. Okay.
And then the English for immigrants and refugees, the recommendation is to maintain current levels of spending, as it is for the lead abatement. Now, the Fatherhood Leadership Initiative, this was the governor's recommendation, and the committee, so far the recommendation is to not fund that. So you'll see the funding source for that was TANF rather than general fund, and so you'll see later where the recommendation is to spend that TANF money in a different area. So if you move to page 2, this is the Department of Human Services, all the accounts for the committee that come underneath that agency. And the governor did make a recommendation in this area, and it's a little bit tricky how it shows up on the spreadsheet, but what the program was called is the Child Care Assistance Program, and his recommendation in the biennium spent about, it was an additional $3.5 million. But it was sort of spread out over the MFIP and the Basic Sliding Fee Child Care Assistance grants. So you can see the increase for MFIP Child Care Assistance grants. The recommendation from the committee so far is to spend almost $147 million in the biennium, and that's about a $1.3 million increase over the base. And this is also where that $1 million in TANF that would have been spent on the Fatherhood Leadership Initiative, it's now going towards the MFIP program. And the basic sliding fee child care assistance grants. This also has some of the increase from the governor's initiative that the committee has put in there, and then has been increased more as well. So the total recommended spending at this point is $90.8 million for the biennium. And then for child care development grants, it's, you can see, $3.03 million, and that's maintaining the base level of spending. And then some of the new programs, the first two, the Children and Economic Assistance Administration, it's an administrative portion of the governor's initiative, so that's what that additional almost $500,000 is. And then with the FFP, it's considered revenue. It's federal funds participation money that you receive if the state receives this if money is spent on any cases that would be eligible for the medical assistance program. And so a lot of the clients who receive MFIP funding are MA eligible. So that's why we get to count some of that money as revenue in that area. And then all of the next ones are all new programs. And the first one is child care licensing. And I believe, is this the 50?
Yes.
This was the $50, limiting it to $50.
And the background check money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this is not one time. This would be ongoing. So in the first biennium, it's $418,000. And then in the second biennium, it would cost $240,000. And then the next three are one-time spending programs, the child care services grants, the Early Childhood Professional Development System, and the Friends and Family Network Grant Program as well.
And that was Child Care Services is Representative Peterson, the Development System is Peterson, and the Family Friend and Neighbor is Murphy.
Okay. And then the Absent Day Policy. Some of these programs, the department, they wanted, they indicated that they wouldn't start until the year, fiscal year 2009. So that's why there's a zero for 2008, and then they begin 2009, and then grow outward into 2010 and 11. And so that's the absent day policy program and the deferral period as well. And so the absent day spends just $238,000 in the first biennium, and then you can see it grows out a little bit, and it's $606,000 in the next biennium. And then restoring half-day rates, we're recommending spending $1.5 million for each biennium. And then the deferral period, as I was talking about, it's almost $1.5 million in the first biennium, and then that grows out to $6.4 million in the second biennium. And finally, increasing the maximum rates for child care providers. The recommendation is to do ongoing funding at $2.1 million for each biennium. So you'll see the Children and Economic Assistance grants total at the bottom there, and then below that is where we have sort of all the grand totals for the committee. So the TANF, total TANF spending that's recommended for the committee is $1 million in the first biennium. And then the total general fund recommendation for 2008 and 9 is $459,755,000. And this is actually the exact target, I think, that we received. So we're right on the dollar. And then the total appropriations, if you add those two, is about $460 million. Thanks. Pat on the back.
For today, anyway.
Yeah. These numbers can change. And so I think an interesting thing to look at then, so just to the right where you see the difference between the house and the base, the recommended spending for this biennium is about almost $42 million over the base, and it's just $1 million shy of what the governor recommended spending.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Grofflow, and then I am going to ask Mr. McCormick to walk through the language as well to give you kind of the other piece here, and Representative Peterson. Representative Grofflow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, thank you for getting the bill to us before committee. I got mine this afternoon and had a chance to read it beforehand, so thanks a lot for doing that. On line 51 of the change document, and perhaps this I am intermixing numbers together, the child care licensing, is that the reduction in the licensing fees for the cap on it?
Right. There's a cap, and so that's the cost. That actual cost is more for the counties, but then we remember the background checks were also in there?
So, Madam Chair, the fiscal cost, I was trying to understand why there's a fiscal cost to that if we're if we're capping a fee at the local level.
You know, my assumption is that it's administrative. I don't remember exactly what the fiscal note looked like.
It's, we're paying for the background checks. I know there's a number of people here from this group, if anyone wants to talk about it further, but we did get a fiscal note on this, and the background checks come at a cost to the state. So it's taking the per dollar amount for each background check that's towards that would be times the number of providers that's projected, and then it comes out to this cost. Representative Grofflow?
And Madam Chair, I can talk with you. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what that was, but and we can have that conversation later. We've got a lot of people. My second question was I'm having a difficulty understanding where the TANF money went, and if perhaps research could you explain what happened?
Sure,
Adrian.
So the governor's recommendation was $1 million for the Fatherhood Leadership Initiative. That's on line 37. And so what we assumed was that the committee could spend that $1 million, whether it was whether we chose to keep that initiative or to spend it on another TANF eligible program.
Representative Grofflow.
Madam Chair, I meant in a more general sense. I know we've had in both sides have done this in the past where we've used the TANF surplus to sort of replace, I'm trying to use politically agnostic terms here, to replace general fund dollars. Are we keeping those in the committee? Are we keeping some of them? Or are we still, both sides have done this in the past. I'm just wondering if we're continuing.
Originally, the governor did recommend spending, kind of doing the refinancing with...
Refinancing, that was the word I was looking for.
With about $40 million of TANF money that would have been in the MFIP program. And I'm under the impression that it's for efficiency, but my boss, Bill Marks, and some of the other chairs, they decided to put all of that TANF money into the Healthcare and Human Services Committee so that it would be... So then we kind of replaced that $40 million with just general fund money that the committee could spend. So the total for MFIP, it was like $40 million of TANF was put into the other committee.
Representative Grofflow, my understanding is from Representative Lyndon Carlson yesterday, we had a discussion between Representative Huntley and Representative Carlson and myself, and they felt it would be cleaner to keep that in the Health and Human Services Committee. Our bill will be split when it goes to finance. The child care article will go to the Health and Human Services bill. The education article will become Article 7 of the educational bill, and at that time the TANF money would be in the same bill. However, my understanding is yes, it's going to be used for refinance.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I promise you, I really didn't know the answer to that question. I was sincerely asking it. So,
well, Representative Grofflow, I was hoping to get some of that money and didn't.
And if I could add, I think part of the idea of keeping it in one committee, you have to maintain these. There are these maintenance of effort requirements. And so I think it's much easier to do that if all the money is in one spot, all the TANF spending is in one spot versus split.
My final...
Representative Grofflow?
And again, a process question. So the early childhood bill, there will not be an early childhood omnibus bill on the floor. We're going to put a portion of it into, you said, Article 7 and K-12, and then the HHS stuff will go into Health and Human Services.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Thank you. Representative Peterson?
Yeah.
paddle of the microphones.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I probably should have picked up on this sooner to ask the question when the bills were being heard, but as I looked at this today, and because I sit on Health and Human Services Finance, I just have a question, and it's line 24 and 25 under Community Ed. And we've been hearing so many bills in terms of hearing loss, hearing disabilities, and the funding and needs in that area, and the Health and Human Services, and also Adults with Disabilities Aid. And I'm wondering why these two would be under Community Ed and not in Health and Human Services. And perhaps I've just missed this in the discussion somewhere.
Representative Peterson, I can explain that a little bit, and if anybody wants to jump in on that, this is the Representative Medora bill. She brought a couple of folks from her community to testify about this. This is under the umbrella of Community Ed and the services that the folks with adults with disabilities receive in this case is through community education. So remember, there was a fellow who his daughter went to some disability programs, but the way it's funded is through Community Ed. And I know because I sit on Health and Human Services Finance as well, and there's a variety of ways to fund things, but this particular funding stream does fall specifically in under Community Ed and in this area. And so we have funded the Medora bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that is, so in other words, I'm it's interesting how those were established. So because there are programs in both areas then, and so Community Ed has some particular niches or bits and pieces of the Health and Human Services under their umbrella.
Representative Peterson, right. I think that way back when it was set up, probably what happened, and I'm reaching back in my memory, is that when they were delivering the community ed programs, and we can, if there's anybody we can talk about this maybe, or also talk with you, is that they found there was a need for people with disabilities in particular to have community ed programs, and maybe needed them in a slightly different format. So that became sort of a, what we call categorical funding.
Just curious.
Okay,
thank you.
Why don't we walk through the language, and I'm going to ask Mr. McCormick to do that.
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to be working off the bill. You'll note that the revisor put this bill together over the weekend into Monday, and there are probably half a dozen or more small errors in how they drafted it, and those will be part of a technical amendment, which will come in on Thursday. But I'm going to start by pointing out that the bill is divided into two articles with the intention that Article 1 be put into the Human Services Bill and Article 2 be put into the Education Bill. And in walking through, I'll start with Section 1 of the Child Care Article, and this is a long section which adds child care assistance programs to the list of programs that can exchange data for purposes of monitoring benefits. And so it's an enforcement provision. On page 5, we see Section 2, which also adds the child care chapter to a list of chapters which prohibit charging interest on overpayment of benefits. Section 3 adjusts the eligibility language for child care assistance, and the operative language is on page 6.
Madam Chair?
Who is that? Representative Eastland?
Do you think when we're going through here, we could have you refer to the bill that basically that we heard in committee that kind of this relates to, and maybe the author, so we can kind of connect some of that stuff.
Representative Eastland, I think that's a good idea. First of all, I want to acknowledge the staff and their hard work. I know Ms. Adrians was here on Saturday and over the weekend and working hard, as well as Committee Administrator Sarah and Mr. McCormick, and Trisha's been working hard. So one, everybody's been working as hard as they can. I do have it listed by bill here. Because remember we had a staff change with the House research, if you don't know, Mr. McCormick, do you want me just to jump in?
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is House File 920, which was my CCAP bill, the language on page 6. The previous stuff, my understanding, is from the governor's bill.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. And I'll take a stab at noting where things come from, but I'm happy to be corrected.
So going back, the section 2, that was...
That's
from the governor's bill.
That's governor's bill? Okay.
Now we're on page 6, which moves us to section 4. And this is a requirement that retroactive payments only be 6 months, and that is from the governor's bill. Section 5 is at the bottom of page 6 and carries over to the top of page 7. Basically notes that payments to a family, by source other than the family, a part of the child's family child care expenses don't affect their eligibility for child assistance, and amount paid is excluded from the family's income if the funds are paid directly to the family child care provider.
Right. That is also from the CCAP bill. You might remember I had a bill on that last year that passed on the House floor. So Lutheran Social Services or someone wants to help a family with their copay, that isn't going to make them ineligible to receive their child care services. So this is language you probably voted on the House floor before, but needs to be in the bill again this year.
Section 6 is on page 7. It's the language establishing the 60-day deferral period, and you noted that that had a fiscal cost and was explained by Ms. Adrians. Mm-hmm. And that was in Senate Bill 920, the CCAP bill. Section 7 is an addition to the list of persons who cannot be legal non-licensed child care providers. People found guilty of wrongfully obtaining public assistance.
If you could tell us the page number.
The operative language is on page 10 of the bill, and this was from one of the governor's bills. Section 8 is on page 11 of the bill. And Section 8 sets the maximum rate for subsidy restrictions, and you'll note that we have a blank rate on page, on line 11.9 and again on line 11.25, and that will have to be set out in an amendment on Thursday. But this comes out of the CCAP bill and is an attempt to set the reimbursement rates. So you'll see an actual number inserted in there on Thursday. And on page 12, in that same section, lines 12.4 and 12.5, that comes from the governor's bill. Section 9 allows a provider rate differential for accreditation for people who have gained a post-baccalaureate degree. That's the governor's bill. Section 10, on page 12, and that's provider payments. That's also the governor's language limiting retroactivity of payments to 6 months from the date providers issued an authorization of a care and billing form. And the operative language acts is on page 13. Section 11 is from House File 920, the CCAP bill. On that. This is the language on absent days. It expands the number of days of absences. To note that absences due to a documented medical condition of a parent or sibling living in the same residence don't count against the 25-day limit. It allows a public health nurse or school nurse to verify an illness. It allows a provider sending a child home to verify an illness. It allows children and families where one parent at least is under the age of 21, does not have a high school or GED, and is a student. It allows those days where they're in school to be exempt from the absent day limit. And finally, if you look on page 14, paragraph E on lines 14.21 and onward, allows counties to pay for more absent days if their policy states that and if they reveal it in the county plan. I'm sure we're now in section 12, child services grants, which is on page 14. This adds an additional set of language on what a child care services grant can go for supporting effective teacher-child interactions.
That's Representative Peterson's bill.
Moving to page 15 of the bill, section 13. This is the county fee reduction to $50 per year. And you'll note that that has the fiscal effect that you've already discussed.
That was a clear Roebling and the Senate really initiated that, and I carried the House bill for that.
Section 14, actually onward for the next 10 or 11 sections, you'll note that we have a wide range of language tied to the way this fee works. We're reducing the county fee to $50 per year, and we're shifting responsibility for background studies to the commissioner and paying for that in the spreadsheet. And I'll enable that to happen in a number of different places in the bill. We're adding language allowing different information flow for background studies. And you'll see that those background studies sections are section 14 on page 16, section 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, carrying all the way to section 24 on page 22. Those sections are tied to that policy change. So I'm going to pick up the description on section 24 on page 22. This is authority and purpose section. It adds child care assistance programs to the authority and purpose language, and this came in as an amendment to the governor's bill, I think, from the governor. Section 25 also came from the governor, and this states that if there are penalties withheld for the child care assistance program through enforcement, that those withhold penalties are reallocated to counties using the allocation formula. Section 26 is a section on the disclosure, allowing the Department of Revenue to disclose data to the Commission of Human Services, and that's a enforcement provision that came from the governor. Section 27 requires the Commission of Human Services, in consultation with the Commissioners of Health and Education in the counties, to develop and present recommendations to the legislature in January of 2008 in order for each legally unlicensed child care provider to receive a one-time home visit to receive information on health and safety and school readiness.
And that's a Thiessen bill.
I'm sure we know in Section 28 on page 24, early childhood and school-age professional development training language, which also has a fiscal impact.
This is the Peterson bill, 1089.
And if you note, the subdivision 2 on page 25 requires new training be identified to meet the 2-hour early childhood development training requirement and reported back by January 15, 2008. Section 29 on page 25 is the school readiness service agreements, which I believe are from the governor.
Right. This is all the governor's section 29.
And this goes on until page 28, section 30. Section 30 contains the Family, Friend, and Neighbor Grant Program.
That's Representative Murphy.
Section 31 on the bottom of page 29, carrying over to the top of page 30, is the Child Care Provider Study, and that's Representative Slawick.
Right.
I got that one right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
We've already gone through the appropriations language, but that includes the article, except for the repealer, which is on page 33. And those two statutes are repealed, I think, in the governor's language. And they are reporting and payment requirements under the child care program. Madam Chair, continuing onward with Article 2.
So this article will be sent to Education, Article 2. The one we just went through would go with Human Services. I think you can proceed.
Section 1 of Article 2 outlines and requires the Commissioner to develop procedures to make payments to programs. A different distribution of appropriation system for Head Start programs that envisions a reporting schedule be created for enrollment, corrective action plan requirements and financial consequences to be imposed on programs that don't meet full enrollment. It envisions that if there is chronic under-enrollment, subsequent program year allocations will be reduced fortunately. I'm not sure what this is.
That is a governor's.
That's a governor's.
Yep.
Section 2 is on page 34, and it modifies the application requirements for eligible Head Start organizations, and provides that they begin making their plans in conjunction with full-day requirements, which I'll continue onward, are found in Section 3 of the on page 34, and that phases in requirements that there be full-day services in Head Start programs or licensed child care. The phase-in starts on line 25% in 2009, 40% in 2011, 50% in 2013. It states some requirements.
And that's the governor's initiative, governor's language.
I'm sure we're moving to Section 4, which is on page 35, adds another line to the purpose clause of community education programs. I think that is the governor's as well. Section 5 is the list of program requirements, and the Section 5 is a combination of the governor's language on program requirements for ECFE programs and a separate bill which came in from one of the representatives in this committee.
It's mostly the governor's on the Section 6 on, are we talking about that, or all on 35?
Yeah, some of the operative language is found on page 35, lines 14 through 19, where they were envisioning what would happen if there's insufficient funds and we're requiring that the concentration include children at risk of not being ready for kindergarten and the children's parents. And then if you look on page 36, we've added a new clause 6, adding community outreach plans to ensure participation by families reflecting racial, cultural, and economic diversity of the school district. Section 6 is an amendment that was offered and adopted in committee, and it to one of the earlier bills, I think to the House Bill 1056, and that requires that teachers and coordinators for early childhood programs, teachers must be licensed in early childhood or parent education. Coordinators have to meet the minimum licensure requirements of a teacher.
That was my amendment. And Section 7 is the governor's.
All right. Section 7 requires that plans and program data submission requirements for ECFE programs specifies what the plans have to be, phases in the plans so that half the districts have to complete the plans beginning in, and then finally it ties the completion of these plans, and you'll see this in other places in the bill, to certification of levies, so that districts are going to have to begin having plans in place before their levies are certified. Section 8 is the revenue language for ECFE programs, and it's tied to the appropriations.
It's a Bly-Kranz bills.
Section 9 is also the ECFE levy section, and it establishes the levy, which is part of the spending for this bill on line 22, but it also includes the governor's language requiring certification to be held unless annual program data and reporting requirements are met. Section 10 is on page 37 and page 38. It caps the amount of revenue that can be used for what I would broadly say is capital needs to 10% of family revenue. Section 11 is the State Advisory Board on School Readiness.
That's mine.
And that's in Representative Slaughter's bill. And you've seen the fiscal impact on that. And the language there continues all the way through page 40. Section 12 states the amount of aid for school readiness and sets that figure. You'll see on line 40.30. Section 13 is the language which expands the voluntary school readiness kindergarten assessment to 30% of children. It's on the top of page 41.
That's a Peterson provision.
Section 14 is the targeted training of early childhood professionals to improve school readiness, and I believe this comes from the governor's language. Section 15 is a series of changes to the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. We're deleting several paragraphs on page 42. We're making some changes to the language on page 43. And finally, we're adopting a legislative advisory task force. And the task force is tied to the two rural scholarship programs, which you'll see later in the bill. So the task force shows up a little bit earlier in the bill than the actual scholarship programs. Section 16 is the after-school community learning programs section, and establishes the programs, creates the grants requirements, and sets the program outcomes.
And that's both the Dominguez and Slawik goals?
Section 17 sets the state total adult basic education aid amount. And you'll see that that's tied to the appropriations.
And that's the Winkler bill?
And on page 45, that same section also puts $100,000 into the GED online system of instructional delivery. Section 18 raises the adult basic education per contact hour from $20 to $22. And adds additional language which establishes the limits for the aid under this program. Section 19 increases the percentage of the GED test fees that would be reimbursed to 75% or not more than $75 per individual. Paragraph B on lines 46.16, that sequence, allows the initial fee for an eligible homeless or precariously housed person to be 100%.
That's Hornstein. Is there Representative Groffo? Do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually rewinding a little bit here, back to page 44. The language on lines 21 through 31, I believe that's the adult basic education aid. When I cross-reference that with the spreadsheet, I'm seeing different numbers, and I'm wondering if anyone can explain why I'm wrong, because I know I'm wrong. I just need to know why.
Ms. Adrian?
Madam Chair, Representative Rockwell, you're not necessarily wrong. I make lots of mistakes, too. What happens is in the language of the bill, we usually put the entitlement amount.
That's it.
And then because of that 90-10 split, that's why the appropriation is different.
Once again, I was wrong.
Thanks for pointing that out. Okay, we'll proceed.
Madam Chair, we're moving to page 46, where we have section 20. These are the increased amounts for the Adults with Disabilities Program.
That's the Madora bill.
Section 21, we have the Early Childhood Community Hub Planning and Implementation Grants language.
That's Peterson bill.
The hub language continues on page 48 to page 49 and ends with section 22 at the bottom of page 49, which is the Neighborhood Circulators Grant.
That's a Lesh bill.
On section 23, we have professional quality rating system transition language for licensed child care programs. I think when we do the language split, this may be moved into Article 1. But I'll verify that, and if so, maybe we'll just move it by amendment on Thursday.
Okay. And 23, 24, and 25 are from the Slawik bill? Mm-hmm.
Section 24 is the professional quality rating transition language for school readiness. And Section 25, we have the two scholarship demonstration projects in rural Minnesota. That language continues on and ends on page 52. Section 26 are the appropriation statutes, and we've already had the appropriations described. Some of the numbers will be slightly shifted in the bill as we update to the spreadsheet on Thursday. And you'll see a number of statements in there. For example, there I think is a report at one point. We have a repealer on Section 56, and this repeals an outdated ABE statute, which is no longer necessary. And that is the language in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Nice job. I think that's, as you can see, there's a lot of language there. We did a good variety of the members' bills. A lot of the governor's language, obviously, is in here through a number of provisions. As you get used to it and absorb it, you come talk to us if you have questions, me or Sarah or... Well, Trish or Mr. McCormick or Ms. Adrians, I have to tell you, this is not an exact science, and things are shifting a little bit. So you are going to see some amendments. We're trying to really stick with this, but there's just some pressure points where if you change one thing, then another thing changes. We do have several people lined up for public testimony. I would like to take that at this point. If there's no questions from the members, Representative Garofalo?
Well, just more of a... comment, or a hypothetical I would pose to the chair, and you can give me a hypothetical answer. With the bill splitting between two finance committees, I'm sitting over here trying to scheme a little bit, and I'm thinking, if hypothetically, we're the HHS portion of our bill goes into HHS, if at that time members were inclined to transfer money from one part of the HHS bill to the other part of it in a way that would benefit the members of this committee. Do you have any thoughts about that? If that would, well, and again, this is purely hypothetical about whether there's a much larger pool of money there. And
Representative Rockwell, I am aware of that. For both DHS and Department of Education, those bills are mega size compared to our bill. Which means, yeah, there's a lot more money in both of those. I can't really speculate on that because, as we know, our colleagues are going through the same process as we are, and they're trying to hit a target as well. So anytime we want to take from another area, somebody, you know, has claim to that money. So it would be a matter of doing an amendment and not asking or working with people to try to make some shifting happen. Representative Groffel?
Madam Chair, I guess my question, and it must be more direct, I'm wondering, are we allowed to do that because of the targets? And I'm just, if you have any thoughts, you can, certainly don't need to answer that question right now.
Madam Chair, I can answer that. House Rule 4.03 allows a combined bill to expend all the accounts within the purview of the combined bill. Therefore, it would be absolutely legitimate to move money from, let's say, Article 1 through 6 of the K-12 bill to the new Article 7 of the K-12 bill, which is in this area. It would be against the rules to, for example, take money from the transportation bill and move it to K-12. But when they combine, the accounts combine too, and then the amendments are legitimate.
I think I better have a talk with my colleagues. Give them a heads up on these questions. Mm-hmm. Is it Representative Peterson and then
Representative Chair? That's kind of what I was trying to get at a little bit earlier with the questions about some of the community ed even. And there are other places that you could look at here. But then sitting on Health and Human Services Finance and hearing the multitude of bills and the needs, I mean, yeah, they have a huge budget, but it could get lost over there, too. So, you know, you're negotiating either place.
There are many, many needs. Yeah, I'm kind of seeing, you know, where I really think this will be an advantage for us is potentially in the conference committees also. Obviously, our bill will be conferenced with K-12, and the other half will be conferenced with Health and Human Services. And, here's the public, you know, I got to tell you, if the Senate bill comes out and they don't have a lot of the investments that we did, and you want these investments, if you want your UCFE programs and school readiness and Head Start and all the things we worked really hard to do, we're going to have to make sure we probably get some of the Senate money to come our way. So I think there will be times where it'll come in play maybe even later down the road, depending on, as we know, the Senate sort of has this allowances proposal on its table. So matching those up, too, is going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of interesting matchups. We'll do our best. Representative Bordo?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm usually a glass half full guy, but I get nervous when thinking about this bill going to the HHS bill, because unlike what Representative Garofalo said, HHS dumping money into our bill, I'm fearful they'll take from it. And if the Senate has the same split, I can see Senator Brigham looking at our bill with like a candy box or something. I get nervous about
that. Right. Well, with yes, and so do I. I mean, it is going to be very nerve-wracking because we're going to be under some mega bills. And you know, as well as all of us know, I mean, the education debate on the House floor will probably be 4 or 5 hours, and the Health and Human Services is 10 or 12 or 14 or 16 hours, and we will get dwarfed in all the many needs there. So I think it's just going to be a battle, and I guess, you know, I'll say I'm counting on all of you that we continue to bring our needs forward and talk about the things that we think are important to the people of Minnesota and to the kids of Minnesota. With that, members, we have some public testimony. I know some people have traveled and need to leave early, so I was going to try to get the folks from out of town, which I think would be Lynn Kunick from Osseo, if she can come up. Denise Wolfe from Rochester. I know that those two can come up. We're going to try to get people up here two or three at a time. Is Chad Dunkley here? We got Chad. Okay, why don't we, whoever can. Nice. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chad Dunkley. I'm with the Minnesota Child Care Association and New Horizon Academy. $40 million is a small budget target for what should be the state's most important thing it can do. You were given a dollar to fix a $100 problem, and it's very hard not to listen to all these great things today, and there's some great things that you're doing. We're a long way from fixing a lot of these systems. Mm-hmm. But I do want to thank you for recognizing a few particular parts of childcare that will make it easier and still swallowing what looks like a 1% rate increase in 2008 after what will be 2 years and then nothing for 5 years. That will be very hard for working families choosing quality care. And one of the arguments I hope that you can take back to the Health and Human Services Committee, should childcare go there, this is a big discussion item in the Senate about the fact that child care really will help us increase our work participation rate under the TANF work requirement changes. We should have more TANF dollars going to rates. And the reason why the work participation rate is most affected by rates, MFIT families are forecast, they get child care. But MFIT families are limited by rates. So MFIT families still lose a lot of quality child care options and really sometimes any options in their community when we do nothing with rates or little. So I hope you not only get your $40 million, but you have some arguments to get some more TANF so you can do more with rates, because these rates will do a lot of damage to the system of early learning that's actually gone better the last few years. And I know, I apologize because I don't want to offend the chair or anyone, but it's too bad. You have a lot of allies in the community, and unfortunately not as many in the leadership of the House. So that's all I should say. Thank you for reinstating the half-day rate. That will make the families who are currently in the system have access to programs they currently don't. It's a frustrating thing that was done. Thank you for clarifying absent day rules. That will affect a lot of those families that are bounced in and out of care. And thank you for thinking of the part of the governor's plan is very innovative, and that is the service agreements. That's a really good idea. It's a really good pilot. It's small, but it is probably a concept that, you know, you hear a lot about accountability in anywhere you spend money. We spend a lot of money when you look at it on basic siding fee and MFIP, and this is a system and a way of bringing in a system that long-term can create accountability and make sure that the families who get child care in this state are going to programs that are getting their children ready for school, and this is a really great pilot project. So, again, if you had a dollar to fix a $100 problem, I'd probably do everything in this omnibus bill. I hope you pass it. But I hope somebody's real brave and decides that child care needs much more than this. And if it's raising revenue, then please do it. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you. And we're hoping people can limit to about 2 or 3 minutes. And appreciate your comments. I'm not going to editorialize a lot at this point. We just want to hear what you have to say. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to, first of all, thank you for letting me share my experiences. My name is Lynn Kunick. I teach an all-day, everyday kindergarten class in the Osseo School District. My school is on a 78% free and reduced menu plan, and we are funded by first grade preparedness money. I'm here to acknowledge the gap between early childhood and kindergarten, and also to talk about myself and the rest of the public as it being our moral and financial responsibility to make a commitment to children and their families through early childhood education and ECFE specifically. We need to make a program that is publicly supported and accessible to all children, not just a few. And I have measurements of the impact of that program. First, I do believe in all-day, everyday kindergarten, but not for the purpose of closing gaps. I believe in it for meeting the demands of No Child Left Behind and the extensive imposed curriculum that we have required to meet those needs. I currently have 24 kindergarten children in my class. I had 12 changes in my classroom before November. I have 32 pull-out interventions daily during the 4.5 hours that I have every day to teach. That means a lot of my children are receiving 3 to 4 interventions. A little over 50% of our kindergartners for this year did not have kindergarten readiness. They lacked the basic skills and knowledge necessary for successful kindergarten. A lot of my children have been parentally abandoned, and I mean socially, emotionally, and academically, as well as sometimes physically. The expectation for me as a kindergarten teacher is to have all of my children in my classroom ready for first grade. Kindergarten teachers are expected to accomplish in 9 months what hasn't been accomplished the first 5 years of a child's life. Unless a child is kindergarten ready, those expectations are pretty unrealistic, improbable, and sometimes impossible to meet. I'm going to give you a brief background of my classroom. Of the 69 children in our school that started kindergarten, they were tested with the BAME test, Title I assessment, and the Peabody Language Assessment. The BAME is a picture point test of basic concepts such as up, down, in, out, around, over, between. 62% of those 69 children knew less than half of the 50 concepts presented. The Title I kindergarten assessment tests for knowledge of letters, numbers, shapes, colors, body parts, name writing, and copying simple figures. The scores range from 21 out of 137 to 128 out of 137. The average for 69 children tested was 82 out of 137 concepts.
Okay, we're going to have you to kind of wrap up because we've got several people.
Okay. And the Peabody, this is the one that really was a major concern to us. There were 69 children tested, and only 19 of those 69 children were language ready for kindergarten. We had 10 children at a 1-year, 9-month level, leaving 40 children at between 1-year, 9 months to 4 years, 10 months. The children that had been in ECFE and readiness program were the ones that scored 4 years and above. The early childhood programs and ECF programs, we found that the parents of those programs learn to take responsibility, understand the value of education, insist on consistent attendance, they're more visible at school events, respond to messages and information sent home, attend conferences, they build relationships with their children, and they don't school hop.
Okay. Well, if you can finish.
Okay. The children with readiness transition. They have all the skills ready to meet the curriculum that will go on to early childhood. What we have is good, but we need more. The kindergarten teachers in my building said it would be really nice if we could start thinking in terms of no child starting behind. Early childhood ECF programs are an insurance plan that protects children, parents, and our future. And all the research that we have shows the benefits of that. For every dollar into these programs, we get $17 back. And we need to remove some roadblocks so children can learn. And I respectfully request that all of you support DCFE and early childhood education as a moral and financial responsibility and help children make the transition from the 1 to 5 into the kindergarten program that will lead us to No Child Left Behind.
Okay. Thank you very much. What we're going to do is have Ada Alden go, and then we'll have you two come up together because you're both on the same topic. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Ada Alden. I serve on the board for Ready for K and the Minnesota Association for Family and Early Education. I've worked with families and staff in Head Start, Child Care, both home daycare as well as center care, ECFE school readiness, and with employees and graduate students. I'm here in support of the Education Omnibus Bill. Dr. Robert Terry of the Humphrey Institute recognized that achieving a vision was about involved, staying focused on a shared outcome. Dr. Terry fretted when two quick answers to a vision were, there isn't enough money, there isn't enough time, there isn't enough energy. Thank you for using your time, your energy, and allocating dollars, because quality early care and education should not be a luxury. Quality early care and education is the catalyst necessary to assure school readiness. Power, structure, and resources, all heading in the same direction, will achieve that mission. You have generated a bill that restores funds to ECFE, school readiness, Head Start, and child care. This is evidence that you heard testimony from statewide early childhood representatives and value the basic tenets of their remarks. We know that whatever happens in the home is twice as important to determine school success as anything that happens in the school up to the age of 14, and clearly those first 5 years have the most impact. I've learned by working with Head Start staff, child care providers, ECFE and early childhood teachers, friends and family and relatives providing care for young children, there is a common concern. The issue is not family structure. The issue is really about family function. Parents can learn to be available and effective parents. Parents need multiple resources, including parent education, when making decisions for their children. Parents have told you how important early parent education has been in helping them to be effectively present in the lives of their children. Thank you for listening. Parent education coupled with quality early childhood experiences are serving two generations of citizens by supporting parents in their roles as caregiver and breadwinner, as well as educating their preschoolers. The time is right for K-12 educators to recognize the critical role early childhood professionals and family, friends, and neighbors play. It's an honor to sit here by a kindergarten teacher. Truth is, third grade math and reading scores relates to exactly what children experience when they are 2 and when they are 3. Readiness for school begins at birth. Quality early care and education is about being accountable. Poorly designed services delivered by inadequately trained providers are unlikely to produce significant benefits. Restoring funds to Head Start, school readiness, and ECFE and child care is evidence you understand. This brings me to Dr. Terry's final aspect for vision success, and that is power. Each of you have power as elected officials. This is about being on the same ship and teaching, and more importantly, your modeling. We are all in this together. We support your efforts and share understanding that our youngest, wherever they are, need healthy, supportive environments everywhere. Thank you for hearing the professionals and parents throughout the state. This bill is only a start. Keep on keeping on. Quality early care and quality early childhood education is a collective responsibility. I thank you for your energy and your dedication and recognizing our kids need to be ready for kindergarten.
Thank you. Next we'll have Beth Mork and Denise Welty. If you could keep it to 2 to 3 minutes. I know then we'll have Tom Citrin-Heisen. I know he needs to leave if he wants to come up towards the back. And then Valet Varro from St. Paul. And then Byron Lehrer will be last, if that's okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on our bill. The the licensing fee bill that we have proposed and that you have offered for us so gratefully is to reduce the cap, to put a cap on licensing fees for licensed family child care providers to $50. At the current time, we just want to make several points. The first is that already 57 counties out of the 86 counties in Minnesota are charging just $50 for the licensing fee, so it's almost two-thirds are already at what we're asking to cap the rest of the counties at. Minnesota has lost 1,000 licensed providers since they introduced the bill in 2003 that raised the license fee up to a cap of $150 for the licensing fee and $100 for the background checks. And we think it's prohibitive of people who are trying to get licensed to do family child care. We want to keep people in the system because by having people as licensed family child care providers, although our licensing standards are minimum standards, we at least get them to meet those minimum standards for children who are in their care. It also allows us to access these providers to encourage them to get training and to give them the support so they need to improve the quality of care that they do for children. The background check fee is just to make the Department of Human Services do the background checks for licensed family child care homes. They currently already do the background checks for licensed family child care centers, and they're in the process of upgrading the technology so that they're going to have what they call a WRAP system, which means that anyone who has a background check done on them would be flagged if something were to come up as a disqualifier after they've had that background check done, so it would be sent back to the person that had gotten the background check so that we could catch someone within the two-year time that they're of their license to know if there was a disqualifier that you had to deal with. Currently now, when a county does the background checks, they only do them every other year in some cases, every year in some cases, and you wouldn't find that disqualifier until the time that they would reapply for a background check, and things do change. So it's just a protective system for our children. And I think it would be more cost-effective in doing it because you'd have them being done by the same place for people working in any kind of a child care system. And we are finding that people do work, you know, as a substitute in different homes, in licensed homes. And with the counties doing it now, you have to pay for the background check in every home that they're working in. So we're just trying to standardize that and shift it over to Department of Human Services where it is now. Providers, licensed family child care providers, pay a licensing fee and a background check fee at this time, where centers only pay for the one fee and it's included in their licensing fee. So it's just an equity issue as far as moving it that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Denise Walty. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. That's Olmsted County. I just want to make a couple quick points. This bill means a lot to myself and providers in Olmsted County because we are the ones that pay the most in the state. There's other counties that pay the $250 like we do, but we're the only ones that pay it annually. We pay more than the male doctors do. We pay over 13 times more than the school teachers do. So by having your support on this bill would make, you know, would help restore what should always be our priority, and that's our children. By having the state pay the background fees for providers and reducing the licensing fee to fair and equitable amount for all providers across the state, this will help enable family child care providers, in-home providers, to keep the level of care and quality at a high standard and be able to help others open up the practice of child care. And this should always be the priority of our kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
The second page in your handout that you got with SEIU in the top is a grid that shows the 30 counties that are charging the licensing fees that are different, and it can show you the difference. It really doesn't amount to that much money for the counties. We know there is a county cost to them reducing licensing fees in some of those counties, but overall licensing is less than 1% of any county's budget.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next we'll have Tom Citrin-Heisen, and if Valley Varro wants to also come up. Again, to the audience, we're going to try to end here at 5:30. We'll have amendments on Thursday. We'll also have some additional public testimony, and we will hopefully be passing the bill out. I guess the folks that are testifying today need to know that if someone testifies the other way on their provision on Thursday, that you know, you've had your time for today. So you can only sign up once is the rule. But I hope that we've worked very hard to put together a good bill and hope people can support that. So with that, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, committee members. Tom Citrin-Heisen with Literacy Minnesota. Just want to say very briefly that we appreciate you having heard our students and our testifiers over the last few weeks. We know you had a very limited amount of money under your targets to allocate and a lot of very important programs. So while it won't meet all of the needs, I just want to say thank you on behalf of our students around the state who are in great need of these services. And we hope this will carry through conference committee and really support you in supporting that. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. And thank you again for working with us on the site visit and so forth, too. So good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Sally Varro from the City of St. Paul. I just wanted to also say a brief couple points of thank you for the commitment of your work for these policies and budget initiatives and your willingness to consider funding towards child care, family-friendly neighborhood provider care, and after-school enrichment, and the state's potential commitment to funding the circulator bill and the professional development bill for library staff and park and recreation staff will go a long way in helping the state's overall goal of closing the achievement gap. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, last but not least, Byron Lair from United Way. Again, if you want to testify on Thursday, make sure you sign up with Sarah. And after this, we will adjourn unless there's any questions. Welcome to
the
committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Byron Lair, and I'm here on behalf of United Way. We believe that this bill makes a good step forward given your budget targets. It takes care of some immediate needs. The absent day policy, Head Start, ECFE, the provider rates at least are going in the right direction. We also believe it addresses long-term infrastructure planning with the child care provider study and with the advisory board. And for those of us who wished you had a larger budget, I think we should pledge to work with you to make a case with appropriate leadership. And on behalf of United Way, we're willing to commit to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. And on that note, all of you that like this bill, and hope this, I think the bill will pass out, so we're going to need your help because there's going to be a fight from here getting it passed and also particularly in conference committee is keeping these provisions could be a battle. So we're all going to need to work hard and we're going to need your help to talk to those senators about how good this bill is. So with that, any questions? I would prefer that you go on Thursday because we've already taken the folks that have signed up, okay? So with that, the committee is adjourned.